Can he do it again? Mike did it. Then he stops, pops, scores! Billy Guerrero again! On back-to-back nights! Oh, boy! 1.5 seconds, no timeouts. Tyreek, at the hole!
Cousins gets a touch, and he helps out.
Oh, that is a man's jam! DeMarcus Cousins nearly brought down the backboard and rim.
You're now listening to the King's Court Podcast, presented by SackKingsNation.com. Here are your hosts, Vince Merrickle and Drew Runberg.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to the King's Court Podcast. I'm your host, Vince Miracle. Joining me this week is your CSN Kings Insider, the host of the Kings Insider Podcast. He has joined the show many times, and I consider him a friend, Mr. James Hamm. James, how you doing?
Good. What's going on, Vince? How are you?
Oh, not too bad. It's Thursday, so, you know, it's not Friday yet, so I can't get too excited for the weekend, but I'm happy to say that I'm alive. I'm kicking. I got to ask you this, though, James. Your first year with CSN, how was it covering the Kings for Comcast Sportsnet?
Oh, it's absolutely wonderful. I love it. To me, it's the best job in SAC for covering the Kings because you get to dabble in TV. You get to do writing. They gave me just complete autonomy to write whatever I want, anytime that I want. You know, of course, I have my standard things that I have to do, my replay and my rewind and my game day. But outside of that, you know, we were able to, like you talked about, bring the podcast over. Just able to do what I do, what I've been doing for a long time, covering this team, but on a much larger platform with a much larger support base. And just absolutely phenomenal to work for them. When you walk into their studio, it's literally like 100 people working at their desks with giant TV screens everywhere, watching everything that's going on in sports. And everyone's a sports fan. People are throwing a football around. It's just an absolutely a spectacular work environment. Very, very happy to be the Kings insider for CSN.
If fans weren't jealous of you already, I think if you just describing your year now with CSN, I think they're 10 times more jealous now.
Sorry about that, guys. Yeah, you know what? I have a dream job. I think everyone out there that listens to podcasts and that, you know, are huge sports fans, they would love to do what I do. And, you know, that's the glamorous side of it. It is a lot of hard work, though. It is. So, I mean, it's, you know, again, before we got on the air, we were talking. I was in Oakland covering the visitors' locker room for the Warriors and Rockets series. I'll be doing some work covering the visiting locker room for most of the playoffs for the Warriors. And at the same time, you know, breaking all the King stuff down as it's happening and trying to keep up on everything as that's going on and writing sources and all that stuff. But yeah, it never shuts off. And I don't know. It's not to complain, but you know, I live a long ways away from Oakland, driving all night long to get home at 2 o'clock in the morning, 2:30. You know, it is what it is. It's part of the gig. But again, I do have a dream job. I will admit that, and we can move on.
Yes, let's move on. So before we actually get into some of our main topics here, James, I actually didn't tell you this right before we started the show, but it's normally 3 years in a row now since every time I get you on, like right after the King season ends, and you are not a fan of giving alphabetical grades on the season, but every year I ask you anyways. So, James, before we get into the coaching discussions and things like that, what would be your grade for the Sacramento Kings 2015-2016 season?
You know, again, I don't like doing it. I don't like giving grades.
I know.
I'll say this. I think this season was a major, major disappointment, but I think it was also very, very predictable. Once you got about 10, 15 games into the season, you saw how it was going to go. They had moments of clarity when, you know, they got up to, what, 20 and 23, and you thought, oh my gosh, they might figure it out. They might make a run, especially with their second half schedule just being a massively simple, easy, you know, cupcake schedule. They should have rolled through the second half of the season. But you saw it coming early. And that's something that I think management and ownership learned from, because you knew that George Karl had lost the room so quickly. And so if I'm going to grade the coaching staff, their inability to win the locker room, number one, was bad. That you just, you know, they lost the locker room early. Number two, their X's and O's were absolutely bizarre. And, you know, people could argue with me all day long that, you know, George Karl has won this many games and all this. It was experimental. Everything we saw was experimental. It was what George Karl thought was next generation, what was going to be like revolutionizing the game of basketball. And the Kings players already hadn't bought into him, and then not buying into his system really just made their defense horrific all season long. It opened up gaps in their defense. The fact that their bigs couldn't show on the high pick and pop was just horrible. They gave up so many three-pointers. I felt like, you know, good coaches, they know how to make adjustments. And I've always considered George Karl a really good coach. And I think this season it became a battle of wits between the coaching staff and the players. And in the end, everyone loses. More specifically, I guess George, because he is no longer an NBA head coach and he probably won't be again. But everyone lost in this situation. So if I'm going to give a grade, I'm going to give an overall F for the team, because I think this team is much better than they performed, even though they won more games than they have in like seven seasons or eight seasons. I would give them an F. Individually, I think there are plenty of better grades that I could give. I think that, you know, if we go player by player and really look at all of those things, that I do believe that, you know, while DeMarcus had some struggles, he was probably a B+. He's probably the best he was the best he's ever been, both on and off the court. And I know some people are tired of all the things that are going on with him. But in all honesty, if you're DeMarcus Cousins and you're going through this stuff again and again, where you're losing and everything else is piling on, I would get frustrated too. I think technicals are really, it's a part of his personality, and it's tough to get away from that. But when things are going good, he was incredible. And I think people should acknowledge that he was fourth in the league in scoring, fifth in the league in rebounding. He's a top five player in the NBA, in my opinion. He plays defense most of the time. It's not like he's James Harden. He still leads the league in charges drawn or second in the league this year. He's an absolute joy to watch. And I think there are other players on this team that really, really played well, as guys like Darren Collison, who I thought was exceptional and such a professional from the beginning all the way to the end of the season. They took his starting job away without even really a conversation. And that was probably a really bad idea. Omri Caspi had a very, very strong season. He, you know, the three ball faded as the season went on. But again, I think that was more just the feel of the team and everything that was going on with this group. But still, career highs and points, shot over 40% from 3-point line for the second straight season. Sort of solidified himself as a sharpshooter from the outside. And I think Willie Cauley-Stein was spectacular when he got long burn. When he played for little short stints and when he was out of the rotation inexplicably in the middle of the season, I think that Willie Cauley-Stein to me was really impressive. And I don't know what happened there. You know, again, we're going to get to some other things later, but I know DeMarcus Cousins talked about him and Rondo going to George Karl and asking him to play Willie Cauley-Stein more. And in all honesty, maybe that's why he didn't, you know. That's kind of the way this season went, where you had very strange decisions every step of the way. Lots of failures. The Marco Bellinelli situation, like I've seen it, because the Kings have had veterans who failed to live up to their career norms time and time again. I mean, we had Chuck Hayes here, so I mean, it's not like we haven't seen a Marco Bellinelli type situation before, yeah. But to watch him just give up on a season and You know, again, there was a time where he was shooting in the 20s from three. I think he finished the season a little over 30%, but still, that's ridiculous. Yeah, there were some major disappointments this season.
So, yeah, it's definitely an overall F. That's what I'm taking from you.
Yeah, that was a long-winded way to say that I give them as a whole.
As a team, as a whole. Not individually, but as a team as a whole, it has to be an F.
Yeah, and the unfortunate thing is I actually like their roster construction. I liked it in the beginning of the season. I thought they made some nice additions.
Me too.
And it just really – you know, even like the beginning of the season, they – George Karl put so much emphasis – and again, like I guess I'll say this too. I'm not calling Marco Bellinelli out. I think Marco Bellinelli – it was part and parcel of a couple of things. Number one, I think towards the end of the season, he just cashed it in and said, I'm done. You know, the whole sore foot thing for the last, like, what, 14 games? I don't know. But early in the season, he was misused so badly by George Karl that put him in a funk that he just never got out of. And it also – it took away Darren Collison. So Darren Collison ended up just being a guy standing there holding the ball, waiting for Marco Bellinelli to run off of six screens and so he could pass it to him. And then behind the scenes, Marco's complaining that Darren Collison doesn't pass the ball where he likes it. And so it really, there's just a lot of dysfunction with this group and a lot of issues that need to be resolved in this offseason.
So now we move toward the offseason. Now we start looking forward to next season, but we're going to have a new head coach. George Karl has now been fired, as we talked about in the beginning of the show and how we addressed it as an overall F for the season. They're looking at a few candidates, James. You have your favorite, and you've announced it on the Kings Insider podcast. I'm going to let you say your name and who you'd campaign for, but before I do, I want to know, what kind of coach do you think the Kings need? Not necessarily who do you think they should go after, but what kind of coach do you think they need going into the new season?
Well, I'm going to say one thing first, that your version or understanding of the word few and my understanding of the word few is totally different.
They're doing an American Idol search, all right? They're doing an American Idol type search.
They are. That's how I described it, right? They like literally it's Vivek and Vlade and Peja up on a stage, and they have all of these people coming through playing guitar and singing for them. Yeah, it's something like, I don't even know if it's 18 or 20 names at this point. It's pretty expansive, to say the least. But if I'm looking for a coach for this group, number one, there's something about coaching that I think it kind of happens over time, where when you're a young coach, it's easy to have this fire in your belly and you can lead a team into battle. And I think as you continue to coach, if you lose that edge where now you sit back and you think of yourself more as sort of a college professor who's trying to expound some knowledge on somebody, I don't think that works. I think today's player has to be led. And the Sacramento Kings had that with Michael Malone. They had a full-fledged leader. Now, X's and O's and what Michael Malone will or won't be in the future, we have no idea. I mean, Michael Malone is the first to say that the people of Sacramento have like made him out to be Red Auerbach. And he's like, I'm just not. But he was a strong coach with a strong personality and an ability to lead. And really, that is what I think the Kings should be looking for with their next coach. Someone who can connect to the players, someone who the players will listen to and follow. Someone who has some disciplinary, attitude to them that they can rein people in and really drop a hammer on somebody that keeps everyone accountable. But at the same time, someone who can get along with everybody, because there are authoritarians that are out there that don't get along with anyone. You know, guys like Scott Skiles. There are people that really micromanage the entire situation. Again, Tom Thibodeau is a guy who's known as like a massive micromanager, both as with the players and the assistants. And now he's also running he's got front office power in Minnesota. So, I mean, again, just more micromanagement and like his hands are in every pie. So they need to find the right guy. And I think we could debate all day long. I mean, there's so many names. And I think the one good thing is, that I think it was 2013, there's this massive movement towards young coaches. And in one offseason, guys like Dave Yeager and Michael Malone and Mike Budenholzer, and I mean, you can just keep going and going. There was all of these coaches there. I think there's something like 13 coaches hired that offseason, and something like 10 of them were first-time coaches, something ridiculous. Well, a lot of those coaches are just now getting to the point where you realize that they aren't, or either they are or they aren't a good coach. And a lot of coaches that were coaches before that got left out of the in the cold, and they were called retreads, and they're just kind of shelved for a couple of years. And so now you have this list of names, which I think is really impressive. And I think the Kings are right to take their time. I mean, they weren't going to get Scott Brooks. They knew it really early in the process. They weren't going to get Tom Thibodeau, and Jeff Van Gundy probably still hasn't picked up the phone. Outside of that, the Kings have basically talked to or trying to talk to just about everyone else that's available, because it's them and really at this point, maybe the Knicks decide to fire Kurt Rambis and maybe Byron Scott gets fired. I think it, you know, it's interesting because I heard last night people were like, man, it's already been 2 weeks. What are the Kings doing? It's like, okay, well, the Knicks still have a head coach and now they're interviewing Dave Blatt. What are they doing? And Byron Scott, the Lakers waited 2 weeks into the offseason to fire the guy. What are they doing? So I think having a slow, you know, really thorough search for a head coach is probably a good thing. And no one's going to bowl them over with just like graphs and charts and say, I'm the guy. I mean, they're doing a very, very thorough search. And so they need a leader. I guess that's, again, a long way to say they need a leader.
James Hamm, your CSN Kings Insider, joins us this week on the Kings Court Podcast. I'm going to pause the show right here to give a shout out to our sponsor. Everyone, go to BrickHouseIndustries.com and check out all of their apparel from hats, shirts, and socks. And when you're checking out, use the promo code Kings Court and get a 10% discount right on us. James, I have to ask you about the process. You said that you think it's great that they're doing their due diligence. They're taking their time to figure out the right coach, but I don't know, having so many names being thrown into this pot of who they should choose from, is that the right way to find a coach, or does it just look as if the Kings are trying too hard to pick the right guy? I don't even know how I'm supposed to phrase that question, but how are you liking the way that they're looking for their new head coach?
Okay, I'm going to turn it around because I'm just going to point out this. Like, because I have been working this story the whole time. Getting any information from the Kings is like squeezing blood out of a turnip, which is like a really old saying. And maybe it's because my grandfather grew turnips. I don't know. Maybe that's why I know that. There's no information coming from the Sacramento Kings. So when you look at this and you say, why are all these names being thrown out? I mean, sure, the Kings interviewed Sam Mitchell and they interviewed Mike Woodson and Vinny Del Negro. But who's putting all these names out are the agents. If you want your client to get a job, and again, everyone's saying, oh, no one wants a Kings job. Well, I hate to tell you this, but they're like 18 different guys who would love to make $3 to $5 million a year. And knowing that while there might be dysfunction, there's also a good possibility that they'll get fired in 2 years and they'll get the remaining 2 years of their contract and they'll walk away with a whole bunch of money. Or heaven forbid, they're the guy who turns it around and now they're a superstar. So there are so many coaches that are going to listen. And there are so many agents that want their guys' names in the conversation. And that's who's driving the conversation about who the Kings are interviewing and who they aren't. I mean, honestly, we haven't known at any point when a guy has walked in the building. And that's because the Kings have tightened it up. And I like that they don't have leaks going all around everywhere. Same time, there are a lot of people. I was told this, and this is actually such a really good point. When you fire people, which the Kings have done a lot of over the last year and a half, 2 years, it puts a lot of people out there in the pool of information gathering that don't like you and will make sure that their whatever reason that they want to like whatever the reason they were fired, or if there's something that they saw while they were here that they think is just ridiculous, they're going to put it out there because they're disgruntled and they're angry and they no longer have a job. And so you understand what I'm saying? So like, you're hearing all these things about the Kings all the time, and it's because the Kings fire a lot of people. I mean, do you think we hear the story where the Kings like don't feed their assistants or their coaching staff after practice with their like really, really expensive organic farm to fork, you know, chef that they hired for the players. And so there's this national story that goes out that the Kings are cheap, that they won't pay for their coaching staff to eat from the personal chef as well. And you know how many other teams in the league don't have their coaching staff have, you know, eat from the personal chef, or how many teams don't have a personal chef? And the answer is no, none of us do, because no one thought to do that research before they wrote it in a story. All they know is that the Kings are cheap because they wouldn't do it. But how do we know that this isn't something that goes on everywhere? And we don't. And, you know, you calling people cheap who have a $70 million payroll and who are building a $500 million stadium in the middle of downtown. I mean, it's just the information, the way that this thing has played out is very strange. I agree. But in the end, I think you just have to step back almost every moment and say, why is this information out there? And that goes from the coaching staff, the coaching search, to anything else. You have to every time step back and say, who would give this information and why is this information out there? And then I think you'll feel much better about what you do and you know, sort of the people that you read, or you'll feel worse about the people that you read once you do that. Once you take a step back and just say, look, I'm going to be objective. Because at this point, objectivity and all that stuff, it's a lost art in the media world. So you might as well do it yourself and be objective and read something with an open mind as to where this information might have come from.
So let's go back to the coaching search here.
Yeah, I keep railing us. I'm sorry.
No, that's all right. I love the information you're giving. It's cool. But let's go back to the coaching search here. You say they need like a more of a leader for their head coach. Who is your favorite? And I think you announced it on the Kings Insider podcast, and you had a guest on your podcast just recently about this person. But for those who did not hear it or did not listen to your podcast, give me your shout out now because you guys should go listen to it. It's an amazing podcast. Who is your favorite choice, or who is your top candidate for the Kings to go get as their new head coach?
You know, I spoke to Jason Quick on one of the podcasts this week. I've been doing extra podcasts this week. So we're kind of taking on the coaching search and bringing in guys who know some of the coaches and guys like myself, but in different positions around the league, who spend, you know, maybe 120 days a year looking a coach in the eye and talking to them and having conversations off the record. And my favorite coach in this situation is Nate McMillan. And maybe I'm crazy. But he's got an edge to him. Zach Randolph called him Sarge. He has a little bit of a militant thing to him, but he's also a guy that really reaches players, that be it Darius Miles or Zach Randolph or Bonzi Wells or any of the other Jailblazers that he was tasked with dealing with, or, you know, the next group of guys that he had with Brandon Roy and Greg Oden and Martell Webster and, you know, guys like Wes Matthews and Nick Batum that he helped bring up and develop into really, really good NBA players. He has an ability to pull people in. And, you know, again, he talks, Jason Quick talked about it on the podcast, but, you know, when Brandon Roy and Greg Oden, and they had one other player at that point. LaMarcus Aldridge.
Yeah.
LaMarcus Aldridge. He would have them over to dinner all the time. And they would have honest discussions about how they were going to sacrifice for each other. Who's going to do what sacrificing and what avenue of the game? And how are we going to get this done? And I think he's a leader of men. And he took a year off and he traveled the world with his wife. And then he jumped back in a couple of years ago with Frank Vogel in Indiana. And Indiana to me is a little bit like Portland, and actually they don't even have as much talent as Portland, in my opinion. I think Indiana is a team that really is so well coached, and Frank Vogel is a big part of that. But also Nate McMillan is a big part of that. He's a guy that, again, Lance Stephenson considers him like a whisperer, a Lance Stephenson whisperer. You know, he's a guy who calmed him down before every game and got him ready to go out there and focused. And that's why I like Nate McMillan. Now, I don't know, the Kings are going to interview Nate McMillan, or they did ask for permission. We know that, but we have not confirmed as to when or whether, you know, they will interview him. But you need a good man. You need a guy who's known around the league as a quality human being who can do good things and who's had a good past. And I think some guys get labeled as retreads, and I don't look at McMillan as that. You know, he spent 5 years with the Sonics. I think it was 5 years. And then he spent 7 years coaching the Blazers. And really, you know, the Blazers fell apart on him. Brandon Roy's knees went to hell in a handbasket, and Greg Oden basically, you know, disintegrated in front of everyone. And if you look back and you put Kevin Durant on that team instead of Greg Oden, Nate McMillan is probably still coaching there. And they probably, if they don't have rings, they at least have really, really, really strong seasons of 50-plus wins for, you know, a decade.
I think the one thing that Jason brought up in your interview with him on your most recent episode of the Kings Insider was, and it was one thing that I really wanted him to address, was that big blow up that happened between McMillan and Andre Miller. And we had Andre Miller out here in Sacramento, and he seemed like he was a really nice guy, but of course he was the 40-year-old Andre Miller, 39-year-old Andre Miller, however old he is, the old man Andre Miller.
He's 40 now.
And he brought it up that, you know, they got into it, and everyone knows about it. If you haven't heard about it, you guys can definitely go read about it. There was a big blow up between those two. And what I really liked hearing is that although he was sergeant, he was very militant and disciplinary, after they had that big exchange and how bad it was, he actually felt bad about it and apologized to Andre Miller, and they became really good friends later on. And I thought that was something where, even if him and Cousins clash heads, I think that, like you said, McMillan is someone that knows how to get on the player's level and admits at times when he's wrong and when he is right.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's huge.
And that's one thing that I think could be very beneficial for the Kings. Although that is actually not my pick. My pick is actually Kevin McHale. I think Kevin McHale is someone who could reach DeMarcus Cousins on a player level as a big man. I think their offensive game in the low post is very similar. I think you see now in Houston with JB Bickerstaff going to be, you know, let go as the interim head coach. And at least that's what it seems like. There's no official word on that yet. But I feel like ever since you've left Kevin McHale go, you see how much he was needed to that team. He coached them to a Western Conference Finals last season, and I think he's the right guy for the coach. He can reach the players on players' level, and at the same time, he demands the respect. He's someone that kind of a little bit reminds me of Michael Malone.
You know, I think, okay, so McHale is incredible. I mean, he's a Hall of Famer, and he, to me, if there's a guy that, I mean, if you can say that, he's a guy that can step onto a court and can honestly tell DeMarcus Cousins, look, I was better than you. I was better than you at, you know, X, Y, and Z of the game. And, you know, so you need to listen to me because I have a bunch of rings and you don't. And I have a Hall of Fame plaque and you want one and you need to listen to me. So in that instance, I get it. He's a very different guy, and I think he's an acquired taste, but eventually I guess every coach eventually loses the locker room. And I think except for Greg Popovich, he will never lose the locker room. He literally, it should be called the Greg Popovich locker room. And they just, like, every locker room, every visiting locker room that he goes to, they should have like a banner. They put up Greg Popovich locker room. anyway,
they slap it every time before they walk out onto the court.
Like, you know, they've got this plaque that they put up on every visit because he has an ability to keep going. I mean, we're looking at, I don't even know how many seasons it is, what, 20 years? And he's been incredible, but he's one of the few coaches in the league that's ever been able to do that, or that's been able to do it in the last, you know, outside of Jerry Sloan, you know, he's been able to do it And so I really think that that Mikhail has he's going to be an acquired taste, number one. I do know that he does not like California at all. He's building a house in Arizona where it's just about done. And, you know, he's 58 years old. And those are things that I consider when I'm looking at this. Like, does he want to be in Sacramento? And I think you could legitimately make a case for the fact that he doesn't want to be on the West Coast. He doesn't want to be in Sacramento. And it's not just Sacramento. He doesn't want to go to LA. He doesn't want to go to, you know, he doesn't want to coach the Clippers either. So I don't know. I mean, Mikhail, I like Mikhail, and I think he's a very, very good coach, and he should be a very strong coaching candidate. And if I'm choosing between three guys and Kevin Mikhail and Nate McMillan and, Ettore Messina are the top three, then either way, I think the Kings have won, because I think they've got three really good coaches that are saying, yes, I would take the job. And saying, yes, that I am willing to try to rehabilitate your franchise. And so I'm okay. I'm okay. If Mikhail's the guy, I'm okay. For media, he's fun because he's very, very interesting. And when he's done talking to media, he literally, like, in mid-sentence, like, all right, I'm done. And he just turns around and walks away. And you're like, wait, what just happened? He's done. And, you know, their PR people go, oh, that's it. He's done for today, guys. Thanks. You're like, oh, okay, that was weird. I don't know what just happened. He's just an interesting guy, and he doesn't love the media, which is not something that you need to be as a head coach. But, you know, he certainly has the chops. I mean, he had a lot of really, really good success in Houston, but the James Harden situation has kind of spun out. And so I'm always a little leery, especially when I think sometimes you need some time away to really – reassess and rethink what your strategy is going forward. And, you know, being a Hall of Famer and all of those things, it's a good thing on one hand, and sometimes it's not, because a lot of players can never live up to what you were, and, or most players can't. And so it's always such sort of a hard thing to live up to. But if Mikhail's a guy, then I'm okay with that.
You brought up Messina, and you know, a lot of people are bringing it up on multiple different podcasts or on the radio as someone that the Kings should really be eyeballing, or at least have them in their top three as a possible new head coach. But for the everyday fan, not a lot of people know who he is. Can you kind of give people a little bit of a background of who Messina is and why he would be, or in your opinion, why you think he would be a good fit for this team?
Yeah, he's one of the greatest coaches in European basketball history. I mean, he's got four European basketball championships. He's an Italian guy who has worked for the San Antonio Spurs for a few years now as an assistant, and he's a really good coach. He's a really smart coach. He actually has done, because you know the Spurs are usually right there, so they go to their coaching staff usually goes to All-Star Weekend because they've got duties there, and he's coached the world team, and I think he's a brilliant coach. And I think he's really intriguing, although he's at the NBA level, he's unproven, but not unproven like Dave Blatt is unproven, because I think Dave Blatt kind of came in and like really didn't have a resume to put forth as an NBA guy. Now, Messina came in and he's been an assistant with the Lakers, if I'm not mistaken, as well. But, you know, he spent time with Popovich, and what we found is that Popovich has a golden touch, and almost everyone who's come from his coaching tree, which keeps expanding every year, you're going to have. I mean, if I'm an assistant coach, I'm begging to get on Popovich's staff, because he's producing coach after coach after coach. And that's something that, you know, that's his legacy, not just as, you know, the leader of the free world that are the San Antonio Spurs. They've, you know, made the playoffs in 36 of 40 years in the NBA, and they're just this incredible beacon.
They're amazing.
And their championships and all that stuff too. I mean, to me, they're the best franchise in professional sports right now. And I think you could put the Patriots like number two. But they're such an incredible factory now for coaches. And I kind of wonder, you know, Becky Hammon hasn't been mentioned, and I don't think the Kings are ready to take the plunge to be the first to hire a female head coach. I think just because they are so much drama that it would just bring a circus atmosphere that they already sort of have and they don't need more of. And I don't think that would be fair for her. And I don't think it's a good spot for many coaches. But, you know, I think Messina is a guy that is intriguing, and he's intriguing for a lot of reasons. But and there's another coach on that staff that's really intriguing too, and that's Emi Udoka. And I watch the players around Emi Udoka, and he's a leader. He's a leader of men. You watch him walk in a room and everyone comes to him to say hello. And I think he's another guy that could really capture the imagination of the Sacramento Kings locker room. But again, a guy who's never had any head coaching experience, and you hope that, you know, that doesn't get in the way down the road. You need really, really good assistance if you're going to do something like Emi Udoka. But I think that goes for any of the coaching hires that the Kings do. They want a coach that's going to want to build a really good staff. And I'm hoping that that's one of the reasons why we keep hearing all of these names. Because, you know, if you look at the Clippers coaching staff, where it's Doc Rivers with Mike Woodson and who else is he? He's got Sam Cassell. He's got Brandon O'Connor. He's got Lord Frank. I mean, he's got two former head coaches and a bunch of up and coming guys on his bench. To me, that's what you need nowadays. You need a bench filled with really, really solid guys who are either future coaches, future head coaches, or former head coaches that may get another job. And so, again, if you bring in Sam Mitchell, you bring in Mike Woodson, you bring in Elston Turner, you bring in all these, there might be a couple of these guys that say, you know what, I didn't get the head coaching job, but they listened and they got my name back out there. But, you know, maybe I do want to be part of a really, really good staff that they might build there. So that's another thing that they need. They need a really good assistant staff.
All right, guys. Now you guys continue to get into the conversation. We've been talking about the coaching staff since the offseason really began. So you guys continue getting into the conversation by using hashtag the Kings Court on all social media platforms. We've got a lot of interesting names so far. James, we've seen Patrick Ewing is a name that keeps coming up. Mark Jackson is some fans' favorites. Out of those two names, because those two seem to be the favorite among fans that I've seen using the hashtag and talking in some of these groups here, do you like any of those guys just as a quick hit, like Mark Jackson or Patrick Ewing as a potential head coaching candidate for the Kings?
You know, I don't mind Pat. I think Patrick Ewing has really gotten, I don't know what it is about Patrick Ewing. I'll be honest with you, because he's worked for both Van Gundy's. He's worked for Steve Clifford for a couple of years now. He's been not just a lead assistant, but like an associate head coach. He's got the resume, not to mention he's a Hall of Famer and a giant man. So I don't know what the disconnect is there. And I would like to know. I would like to know why people, you know, no one's really going to be honest with you and throw someone under the bus as to why they didn't give him a job. But I would like to see him get an opportunity. Is Sacramento the right spot? I don't know. Maybe it is. Maybe DeMarcus Cousins looks up to Patrick Ewing and says, look, you know, I've been told this, like, if you were to see DeMarcus Cousins at a restaurant and he was with Patrick Ewing, who would you want to go up to and talk to more? Like, who would be the bigger star? And I think for a lot of people, the answer is easy. It's Patrick Ewing.
Yes, I mean, again, I was literally about to answer your question because I thought you were asking me. I was going to say, yeah. Ewing easily.
Well, yeah, but I mean, he's an icon, and I mean, he was New York. And so I think people like that idea with him, that he might be able to, again, capture the imagination of DeMarcus Cousins. And I don't know if that's 100% accurate. I don't know if it would work. I don't know if there's something about him that doesn't work. But I don't know. I'm not 100% sold on him as the next Kings coach, just because, again, I want someone with some experience, and that's that as a head coach, because this is a bear of a job. It's a job that you walk into not knowing if you're going to have the best big man in the game or not. It's a job that you walk in knowing that your front office is new and doesn't have a lot of experience and may have made a mistake or two in the past. And you walk in with an ownership group that has clearly made a lot of mistakes. And so you have chaos that you're walking into. And I want a coach that knows how to focus the troops and knows how to keep himself on task when everything around him is going a little haywire. And, you know, again, with relocation sagas, I'll say this, like people may or, you know, Kings fans may or may not like Paul Westfall, but he was so eloquent with dealing with the relocation, the first relocation attempt by the Kings to try to move to Anaheim. If there was any other coach, none of the other Kings coaches could have handled it the way he did, the way he showed empathy towards the fans and avoided getting himself in trouble, but, you know, kept his players safe and protected them from the questions and asked that the questions go through him, as opposed to, you know, again, not to throw a guy under the bus, but Keith Smart refused to answer anything about relocation. All he was talking about was X's and O's, and we got a game to play tonight. It's like, okay, well, we're just going to go ask your players. See ya. You know, and so you need someone who can handle the chaos, because Sacramento's not – it's not just like magically someone's going to snap their finger and the chaos is going to stop. So I need someone who can do more than just, you know, talk X's and O's. And they need to be a figurehead too. And so – that's another qualification that I think you need for this job.
Now let's move on to the players here, James. Two of note that a lot of people are talking about, mainly due to the fact that they declined their player options, is Quincy AC. But what the fans are really talking about is Seth Curry, because of how well he played down the stretch. He is a restricted free agent because he's only been in the league for 3 years, so declining his player options means he's a restricted free agent, so the Kings will have the opportunity to match. For both of these guys, James, do you think they are back in Kings uniforms next season?
Man, that's a tough one. I think Quincy AC wants to be back and would love to be back, and I think he will figure out a way to make that happen. I think what he showed this season was that he was better than a minimum salary guy, and that doesn't mean that he thinks he's worth like $12 million a year. I think what it means is, you know, when you start a certain amount of games and when you bring an energy and an effort and a locker room presence that's well-respected and you're adored by your teammates, I think you've made yourself, you know, as a dirty work guy, an energy guy, you've made yourself valuable. Now, is that $3 million a year? Maybe. You know, if it's a three-year, $9 million deal, then I think the Kings are willing to say yes. We would take Quincy AC back at something like that. I don't think he's going to get anything crazy. I just think he's looking for more long-term stability. Again, he's been playing for the minimum last year, and this coming off season, when he did opt out, he opted out of a minimum deal for next year. So I think that's one thing. And he's unrestricted free agent. He can go anywhere that he wants, but he does love Cousins. He does love the city of Sacramento. He's told me that repeatedly, that he loves the fan base. He came back here because he missed it after they traded him to New York the previous year. And, you know, he made his own decision to come to Sacramento in the same way that Omri Caspi did. A lot of guys find that Sacramento is like a calming place for them to live and to grow their family and all that stuff. So that's number one. Now, number two is Seth Curry is probably one of the more interesting situations that you're going to come across, because he's kind of like that running back in fantasy football that busts off with like 600 yards in the last 4 weeks of the season. And you're not quite sure if he did that because he played like the worst teams in the league, or if he just had like a moment where he had fresh legs and everyone else didn't, or if he's just that good. And I think Seth proved that he's an NBA player, but I don't think he proved that he's much that he's a star by any, or even a starter, or even in a lot of situations a rotational player. I don't think, and I'm not saying he disproved that he's any of those things, but I don't think he proved that he is any of those things. And so when he opted out of his deal, I think the Kings were disappointed, because they thought that they might be able to get him for really cheap for one more year and kind of see what they have. But at the same time, someone, because of his brand name, because he is a Curry, might be willing to pay him $5 or $6 million a year. And the Kings are not going to match that. I mean, that's crazy talk money for a guy who really had like a hand, well, maybe 12 good games on the entire season where you can point to and go, man, he was really good. Now, can he do certain things? Yes. But we also saw in the last game of the season where Patrick Beverley just absolutely shut him down. So what that tells me is that he's a player that probably will do better against second unit guys. And that means he's a second unit guy. And how much do you spend on that? And how much is he worth sort of to have a Curry on staff? And I think Divac did a really nice job of finding him and getting him to come in to and giving him a 2-year deal where everyone thought he was crazy to give all of these. He gave James Anderson, Quincy Acey, Caron Butler, and Seth Curry all 1-year deals with a second-year player option. And everyone's like, oh, you're crazy, man. I think at this point we realize that most of those guys are opting out of their deals, and not because, you know, because they didn't get – well, Caron Butler probably because he didn't get to play. But really because they can go out and make more money, and it's not like the Kings are strapped with a roster spot. So the restricted free agency thing is going to be interesting. Again, the one thing about Seth is that for the Kings to extend a qualifying offer to him is like pennies. It's the cheapest qualifying offer that you can ever possibly get. But because he doesn't have 4 years of NBA experience, he's not an unrestricted free agent. He's a restricted free agent. So it should be an interesting situation. Kings fans fell in love with Ike Diagu like 5 years ago. Maybe it was a little bit long ago. He had 3 games to end the season where it was like, oh my gosh, he's going for like 30. And you're like, this guy's incredible. Let's lock him up. Let's give him all this money. And I think Ike Diagu played like 5 games ever in the NBA after that. So you just have to temper your understanding of what's happening. Somebody has to score on a team that's sitting all of their best players every night. And Seth Curry was a benefit. The beneficiary of a lot of that, but he also played solid defense. He hit some big shots. He showed the ability to take people off the dribble. He showed the ability to create. He's a nice little player, but I don't think we know if he's a 8th man or if he's a 12, 13 man on your bench.
I have already predicted it because of how well he ended the season and because of his last name. I say 3 years, $18 million. He's going to get $6 million a year.
That's crazy talk. If he gets $6 million a year, I would be shocked if it was with the Sacramento Kings, because that is a lot of money, and there's a lot of money floating out there, and that's what you have to be worried about, that somebody is going to pay him because there's so much money, because he's a Curry, because he can shoot a 3-pointer. And again, I like him, and I think he's a good kid, but you know, he's very quiet. He's very reserved. He's not a personality in your locker room. He's never going to demand the ball, even though he should. So, I mean, and while those things might sound like negatives, they're really not at the NBA level. You have to have a personality. You have to be vocal. You have to, you know, call for the ball and say, look, you need to find me because I'm hot. And those are things that Seth needs to work on, sort of his command of the room.
Last player here, James, and we're running short on time, so I'm gonna have to press you on trying to keep it a little short here. But
I refuse to answer short answers.
Oh, okay. Well, then let's let's see what I can do. We got 10 minutes. Rajon Rondo. Everyone wants to hear your take. I know they do. Should the Kings bring him back?
Man, should they or will they?
I think those are two separate questions, because should they? I don't think they should personally. And will they? I think they will.
You know what? I'll say this. I think the one thing that Seth Curry really showed is that Darren Collison and someone else manning the point guard position might be better than Darren Collison and Rajon Rondo manning the point guard position. And I think that a lot of that is Rondo's own fault, because he decided to quote unquote rest plenty of times down the stretch. But I think people also forget that he led the league in assists. He set the all-time Kings record for assists in a season. He had 50 games with 10 or more assists. He had, what, 5 triple-doubles? And he could have had, like, 4 or 5 other triple-doubles. He was actually really, really good, except for on the defensive end, where he was an absolute sieve. I'm going to blame the scheme on some of that, and I'm going to blame Rondo on some of that. But I do believe that the Kings are going to take a wait-and-see approach with Rondo. If he gets stupid money, they're just going to wave goodbye. And they would like to have him back to work with DeMarcus Cousins. I was told early on that if Cousins was back, expect Rondo back. I think that's shifted. If Cousins isn't back, if they do decide to trade Cousins, Rondo won't be back, even the least bit. So that should kind of tell you somewhere where they're at with this. But he's an interesting cat. I actually like him. I wouldn't mind covering him for a couple more years, because he does have games where he's just so incredibly good. And for those people who say, oh, you know, just flat out Darren Collison outplayed him all year long. And I'll say this, there is a huge difference between games when Darren Collison was playing with Willie Cauley-Stein and when Rondo was playing with Willie Cauley-Stein. Rondo has an ability to get people open, and all of those highlight reel dunks on Willie Cauley-Stein, almost every single one of them came from Rajon Rondo. I saw one late in the season from Seth Curry, but the rest of them were from Rondo. He has an ability to break down a defense and to find guys like Cauley-Stein and get them going. And then once you get Cauley-Stein going, he's got unlimited potential, but you got to see some of the other things he could do. But the first thing you have to do is get him, you know, 3 or 4 dunks to get him fired up and into the offensive flow of a game. And Rondo has that ability.
You keep bringing up the possibility of Cousins being here or not, and I just want to ask you, what is your over-under on percentages on what you think Cousins will be here, and whether or not Cousins will be here next season?
I think it's more like 80-20 that he will be in Sacramento. Okay. And, I mean, 20% is still a pretty substantial amount, but I do believe he'll be there. I've been told that the Kings would have to be just absolutely blown away, because they have the option to trade him, you know, now they have the option to trade him at the trade deadline. And some people are like, well, if you don't trade him at the trade deadline, then someone's only trading for him for the last year of his contract. And it's like, no, not in this modern day CBA. Here you have the ability to lock him up to a 5-year deal afterwards. You can sign him to an extension next summer. I mean, there are all kinds of things you can do when you pick up a player like this. And even if that is the case, you're playing with him at a discounted rate of, like, I mean, it's almost $13 or $14 million a year on what he could get on the open market.
He makes the same amount of money as, I think,
Damari Carroll.
Yes. That is ridiculously crazy to me.
Yeah, him and he's such a huge discount. Parsons, like all those guys, they it's disgusting, isn't it?
It's just,
I mean,
it's crazy. Huge discount. You can't get rid of that. Can't get rid of that. All right, guys, that is our show. I want to thank you, James, for coming on the show. Let the fans out there know where they can find you online, what they can expect from you going forward throughout this entire offseason.
You can find me at csncalifornia.com or csnbayarea.com. Just pull down the Kings tab, and there I am. I have the podcast. You can follow us on iTunes. On Twitter, I'm at James_Ham. I do also have a Facebook page, which you can find. It's the James Ham Journalism page that I have. So you can find me in all those places. I'm the CSN Kings Insider. So that's where you'll find most of my work, that, and you'll see me on Twitter actively making snarky comments.
Well, you guys can follow me as well on all social media platforms of at VM Center. Be sure to go to SatKingsNation.com for all of your in-depth coverage of the Sacramento Kings. And go to our sponsors, BrickHouseIndustries.com, and check out all of their apparel from hats, shirts, and socks. Let them know you found us on here on the Kings Court by using the promo code KingsCourt and get a 10% discount on us. Also, guys, for FanDuel players and everything like that, I am doing the DFS podcast over at Hoop-Ball.com with Aaron Brewski. So you guys can definitely check that out every Tuesday and Thursday. And until next time, Sacramento Kings fans, bye-bye.